This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Be careful what you wish for. One of the old cliches, right? Well, Kevin Durant wished for a trade, didn't get a trade. And instead, what does he get? He gets nothing. He gets the status quo. Like Michael Corleone in Godfather 2. My offer is this, Senator. Nothing. The owner of the Brooklyn Nets, Joe Tsai, did not fire Sean Marks, did not fire Steve Nash, and Kevin Durant is going absolutely no place. There was a superstar in the NBA that tried to wield his superstardom to get what he wanted, to get out of a situation he didn't like. But in the end, the ownership group said, nah, you know what? I think you're going to stay. Now, maybe it wasn't as ferocious as that or as powerful as that, like the Michael Corleone example. Maybe they really did sit in a room and hash out some grievances and came to a big hug at the end and said, let's do this and win it for Brooklyn. Maybe they did. Maybe they did. But in the end, the optics are this. Kevin Durant didn't like where he was and wanted to trade. And they're like, your max hasn't even kicked in yet. What are you talking about? You just got here 10 seconds ago. What are we talking about here? And all of a sudden, now he is going to be playing with Kyrie Irving. He's going to be playing with Ben Simmons. And they are going to be coached by Steve Nash. And the front office is going to be run by Sean Marks. Everything that Kevin Durant wanted to change didn't get changed. He basically said to Joe Tsai, it's either me or them. And Joe Tsai went, how about both? And there's nothing anybody could do about it. As we were talking about earlier this morning, the trade rumors were just that. I don't think there were any real suitors here other than exploratory, maybe this is what should happen or this is the package that should come together. Nobody in the NBA, despite the amazing, out of this world, unique talent that Kevin Durant is, I don't think anybody in the NBA was going to give up a 22-year-old superstar, a 23-year-old superstar for his services. And I don't think that, I think when you have a player like that, that knew he had some power, get brought down a little bit, I think it's worthy to explore why. We'll talk a little bit about that this hour. We do have the Seahawks coming up. Stacey Rost is going to join us from 7-10 in Seattle to talk about the Seahawks. Went 7-10 last season, but that 7-10 included a majority of the games played by Russell Wilson, who's no longer with the team. How did that come about? How did Seattle take it? And what's in store for 2022 as we continue?
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Stacey Ross is going to join us at 40 past the hour. We'll talk to her about the Seahawks from 7-10 in Seattle. Again, team that went 7-10 last season, but a quarterback battle between Geno Smith and Drew Lock. So my question this morning on Kevin Durant, has he become an NBA villain? Now, is that the perception that we have of Kevin Durant instead of a unique mega superstar? I mean, this did not work out the way he wanted, and I felt like the reaction, man, social media is such a small sampling, but I felt like the reaction was, good, I'm glad. I'm glad the Nets didn't trade him because he didn't like where he was. Good for the Nets. He was under contract. They didn't have to move him, and they're not going to. And then he's like, well, I want the coach fired. I'm like, nope, he's staying. Well, I want the GM fired. Nope, he's staying too. So here's the deal, Kevin. You're going to play. He's going to coach. He's going to run the team. And that's it.
I feel like his villainy, however you want to say it, began when he left the Thunder.
I do too. And people warned him about that. They said, America doesn't like this kind of thing. You think they do because they like winners, but they don't like winners. They like how you win. They like how you came about it. Jumping on a team that's already winning championships to go grab yours is not something that Americans respect. If you earned it in Oklahoma City, it would have been an entire different look.
And we hated LeBron when he went to Miami.
Absolutely.
And then we're happy when the Mavericks beat him that first time. We're like, yes.
Well, that was so unique because I remember thinking, okay, look, inevitably they're going to win, right? But when Dallas won that series, it was like, okay, I know they're going to win some titles. I'm not dumb enough to think they're not going to win anything. But this was two things. One, there could have been enough cracks in that super team thing to make it sort of start to fall apart from the inside. And two, it was just, it was great that they were showing off and they didn't get it the first year that they were together. Like, Dallas beat them the first year they put that thing together. When they were on the stage, not one, not two, not three. And then Dallas went, yeah, not this year. How about that? You know, and they eventually got two. But in the end, they never got seven. They didn't get five, right? And
but we had a lot more respect for LeBron when he went back to Cleveland.
That's when LeBron changed. Exactly. Like, LeBron's this villain, but then he goes back to Cleveland, like, we're seeing sort of somebody making something right, because the decision was a mess and he got bad advice and it ended up not being what he thought it was going to be in terms of the outrage that the city had. Fans don't understand your personal dilemma, right? They don't get it. They don't care. If you're a coach, let's say you're a successful college coach and you're winning national titles and you go, I quit. And you're like, why are you quitting? And then you take a job in another location in the country and they go, well, my mom is sick and we want to be closer to my mom. Fans couldn't care less. Nobody goes, oh, well, good luck, coach. They still hate you. It doesn't matter what your reasoning is. LeBron's reasoning of, this team doesn't put anything around me. I can't do it. I try, but they can't do anything. This league is about who you're playing with. Not one man can lead you to a title, and I've told them that, and they're not doing anything. People in Cleveland are like, I don't care. And he went to Miami, and they hated him. They burned his jersey. Durant had a team. Like, Durant had a team around him. He had two other guys until one of them left, and James Harden. But he still had Westbrook. They had a team. They were up 3-1 against Golden State. Didn't close it out. Then he goes over to Golden State, and everyone goes, no, we're not taking this. We're not accepting this. That team is building something without you, and you're going to make them better, and you're going to skew this in such a way that this is not even going to be competitive. But LeBron and Cleveland certainly tried, right? I mean, they certainly tried in that 2017 season when they went back and played again as the Cavaliers were the defending champs. But in the end, no one was going to beat the juggernaut of the Golden State Warriors. His villainy comes in. He goes to Brooklyn. Now he's feeling like, I learned a lesson. I got to do something on my own. But he's hurt. He doesn't play. He's recovering from the injury that he suffered with Golden State on that season in 2019 where he was just sort of, he wasn't available. Then he was. Then he got hurt again. But the Kyrie situation was a disaster. James Harden wanted out almost as soon as he got there. And now he's like, he didn't get anything he wanted. He couldn't use any of his leverage to get any circumstance in Brooklyn changed. And as I said earlier, maybe it wasn't as powerful a statement by Joe Tsai as I made it out to be. Maybe it was hearing Durant out, them coming to an agreement, them airing out some differences. Maybe it was a long process of understanding where Durant goes, you know what, Steve? I didn't want you to be my coach, but now I do want you to be my coach. And Sean, I see where you're coming from and the decisions that you made. I understand. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt and say that's possible. I doubt it, but it's possible. But I think the message of Brooklyn going, no, we're not trading you because you're not happy. You're under contract to play basketball for us. And we pay you a lot of money to do that. And we decide who's running the front office and we decide who's the head coach. Now, there are players like LeBron who can get coaches fired, and there are other players in the league that can do that. But I think Joe Tsai is saying, no, we're not doing that. We are keeping the guy we chose. I know you liked other people, but this is the guy we picked. And I think that's a pretty bold statement that Brooklyn made. They heard a guy whining, and they went, no, we're not. You know, and by the way, do you realize how difficult it would be to trade you? We're not trading you for three expired contracts and two draft picks. Like, we're not rebuilding. We have a team that can be competitive for a championship. We have you, Kyrie, and we think when Ben Simmons is on the floor, he's going to be one of the best defenders in the league because he has that kind of potential. So no, we're not going to ship you away and go, well, we tried. I hope you enjoy a cast of characters that are going to come and go. No, we're not doing that. And good for him. Good for that owner. Because he didn't get blinded by the bright light of the superstardom of Kevin Durant. Now, again, maybe Durant is like, I never really meant I just want a better Brooklyn Nets team, and you're giving that to me? Okay, that's fine. But 50 days from the moment he said, I want out of here, we're at this point where the Nets went, nah, you're staying. I mean, in reality, what were they thinking? Maybe Durant lives in a world where he doesn't know what teams out there would be willing to give up for him. But did he really think, like, DeAndre Ayton, Devin Booker were going to be packaged in a deal for him for the Phoenix? Like, what? Like we talked about this. Remember when we talked about this at the when this first broke? And we were saying, what kind of team would Kevin Durant land on if all the superstars are gone? Remember the two teams he wanted to go to were Miami and Phoenix?
Yeah.
And I'm like, how convenient that the two teams you want to go to are the two teams that won their conferences during the regular season. Like, you didn't say, I want to go play for the Orlando Magic. That's an up-and-coming team. Like, you didn't say anything about, like, joining Zion in New Orleans. Like, you made a trade demand in the first two teams were teams that were built to win championships. But here's the thing.
It's Golden State all over again.
Right? Yeah, right? Except here's the difference. When you joined Golden State, the Thunder didn't get Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, and four draft picks. Like, you wanted to go to Phoenix because there were certain players on the Suns that you liked who would probably and more likely be part of a deal to get you in the first place. Oh, you like going to Miami? How about we take the people you like and ship them to Brooklyn? See how you like it then. Like what team did he think he was going to be landing on? Like one or both of the superstars were going to have to be gone in a package deal. Like I said, Brooklyn was not going, you're too expensive. We can't win. We're going to move you because we got to start all over again. So we're looking for assets. We're looking for picks. We're looking for expiring contracts. All of those things to allow us to build down the road. No, the Brooklyn Nets were like, yeah, we're a contender. So when you leave, anybody that comes here better allow us to continue to be a contender. So basically, we're looking for a package that's you. And that means basically stripping teams of their good players. So what kind of team was he thinking he was going to land on in the first place? But I'm happy for it. Like, how many times have we said when a whiny athlete goes, I want to get traded, and we go, they should tell him to shut up, and they don't.
Yeah.
And then the next thing you know, the news is he did get traded. They did ship him out. And everyone says the same thing. I'd rather have players that want to be here. No, why don't you have players that are under contract and just expose them when they fail to show up and play hard?
Or Durant, I have an idea for you. Take the Nick Saban route. Just rework your current contract for more money.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's a good one. Yeah, just do the Nick Saban thing. Make sure they love you enough to keep giving you raises. All the time. Can't stop. Can't stop giving you money. Just open up the briefcase. Oh, it's got to be great. They invite administrators over for tea and coffee. They bring the briefcase. They just leave it over in the corner. Yeah, Miss Terry, that's our upgrade this year. That's what we're doing. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk a little baseball and barbecue. When we continue, it's Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Tomorrow's show, we do have Throwback Thursday. We'll also be previewing the LA Rams, the Super Bowl champions, part of NFC West week. Next week, AFC West. And boy, I'm really looking forward to that week. I'm just so excited about that division. It's going to be really tough. To see who comes out of that one. But I think the NFC West has got a lot of great storylines. Maybe Seattle, not so much. given that they are a team that went 7-10, did make a playoff push, lost Russell Wilson in a trade, having a quarterback battle that's not all that exciting. But, you know, divisional games can be tough, and there are three teams that are all looking for their piece of this pie and how it comes about for them. So we got Stacey Rust coming up next just about 13 minutes. We're going to talk to her about that coming up as we continue our previews of NFC West teams this week. All right. A couple of months ago, we had a couple of gentlemen on from Baseball Barbecue to talk about their amazing baseball rub and also their very unique utensils that you use for barbecue. I still use mine with baseball bat handles. They were great. Well, now they have got jersey cutting boards. This is Brett Mandel. He joins us from Baseball Barbecue. He's got some really exciting stuff for the upcoming barbecue season for this fall. How are you, my friend? Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm doing great.
Let's go back to, because we talked to you a couple of months ago about Baseball Barbecue. Give us a little bit of history about the company and where you guys are heading.
So a bunch of years ago, a guy took a cracked baseball bat and a broken grill fork, stuck them together to make a terrific tool. We patented that idea. So now we have patented bat handle barbecue tools. We pair them with some fun things like cutting boards and some barbecue rub like you talked about. People can go to baseballbbq.com to check it out. And now we've just debuted a new product, cutting board in the shape of a baseball jersey. You can get your favorite team logo on the front, Yankees, Phillies, Astros. Get your name on the back with your number, or get any player's name on the back with a number. It's a terrific board. It's great for your barbecue. It's terrific if you want to hang it in your man cave. We're having a terrific response to it so far.
And those cutting boards can be personalized. You can have your kid's name on it, your name on it with a number, whatever you want.
Absolutely. If you wanted to send us your kid's Little League logo, we could put that on the front and
nice.
Put Joey's number 17 on the back. Or you could get Aaron Judge, or you could get Mike Trout, or any other player.
That's great. I tell you, I was just talking about the handles, and I love them. I love them. They are a huge talking piece. But I will give you the rub compliment. My wife is a little sensitive to that kind of rubs or any sort of spices. She loves it. It's the one that she'll use. I asked her. I said, I know I like it, but I know you're a little bit, you're just kind of a salt and pepper person. But she absolutely loves it. So that's the seal of approval in our house. But the tools are the big talking point. I think they're great. They are so fun.
They're wonderful. They're hearty. You can use it for your biggest steak. When you have a baseball bat handle in your hand, it feels right. You know, the grip is terrific. You can't hold it wrong. So it's functional. It's, of course, very exciting for us to have Major League licensing, Minor League licensing, Players Association licensing, so you can get, Yankees or Phillies or Diamondbacks or whatever on your tools. So people are really going crazy for it. And, the rub is good. The tools work. We wouldn't be putting out stuff if we didn't stand behind it, and people are having a great reaction.
Yeah, and I think with the cutting board, I mean, just in terms of the jersey angle of it, that's any other. How do these ideas come about where you start thinking, how do we marry the familiarity with baseball to tools that are used in the barbecue world?
So I'll tell you exactly how these ideas come about. The guys behind Baseball BBQ are a bunch of old guys who like to still play baseball together. And we go to tournaments, and when we're playing in tournaments, there's a lot of downtime where you're recuperating and tossing back a few cold ones and sitting around the hot tub. And guys say, what about this? What about that? And one of our guys said, what about cutting boards in the shape of a jersey? And we said, that's a winner. Let's do it.
I think the one thing that you guys have that's really cool, I struggle to find gifts for people in my family, for friends, and I'm just like, oh gosh, I got to get somebody something. And I'm trying to find something unique or something different, something that, and I think these things are perfect. Baseball Barbecue BBQ, baseballbbq.com is the website. You can use code SPORTSMAP20 for 20% off. You're also, the company's also coming out with some sauces or a sauce to complement the rub.
Hopefully for the holidays this year, we're testing the sauce right now. Chef Big Rube has given us his secret recipe, so we're working on it. When it's ready, we're going to put it out there. As you said, people have been going crazy for this rub. They put it on any meat. If they're weird, they put it on tofu. But it's been terrific. And so we're emboldened. We're going to keep doing stuff until people say we don't like it.
Go check it out. BaseballBBQ.com is the website. Again, SportsMap 20, 20% off. Again, with the holidays coming up, looking for a gift idea, these are great. Also, because the barbecue season with football season coming and baseball season with the getting to the World Series, you're going to love this stuff. Brett, always good talking to you, my friend. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on.
You got it. Brett Mandel, baseballbbq.com is the website. And I've got the fork, I've got the spatula, the cutting board, the rub is fantastic. Like, my wife is so sensitive to that stuff. Like, no matter what I do, I put like steaks on, and I have to have one that's like lightly seasoned for her. Like, everybody else in the family is okay with what I put on, and I have to do just a little bit of seasoning. And I've explained to her many times that meat without seasoning is really bland. You're not going to like it, but she's just, but this rub is really good. She really likes it. It doesn't hit her the wrong way like some others do. I mean, I get a little crazy with the seasonings like anybody else. But again, sauces eventually to come out. Chef Rube is magnificent. We got to talk to him. He was a lot of fun to talk to a while back. But again, baseballbbq.com is the website. And again, SportsMap 20 for 20% off. As you're looking for a special gift, like he said, the cutting boards in the shape of the jersey can have a baseball, the Major League Baseball logo, name of your favorite player with a number, your kid's number, everything can be customized with a cutting board. So these make fantastic gifts. So check them out. I love keeping the barbecue season alive as long as I possibly can. I do. I've gone out there. Now, we don't get winter like I used to get winter in New England or anything like that here in Nashville, but it does get cold. I do try to get out there a little bit when it's cold, but I try to extend it as long as I possibly can. There's something about a grill. I have to tell you, I take better care of the grill than I do a lot of things around my house. I'm always cleaning it. I'm always like looking at it, like adjusting it, like, taking out the grates and scrubbing the grates and making sure I love my grill. I just love it. I bought like a table accessory for it. So it's a nice little corner of our patio. I just enjoy it. So anything that I can get to make the grilling experience a lot better, I always go down that road. I was curious. I was going to ask him this, but I didn't want to put him on the spot. What do you think is the popular team that like the one team that is being sold more than others? You'd think it would be the Yankees, but I'm not 100% sure. I wonder if it's like the Dodgers or the Astros or some other team, the Braves, some other team that's had some recent World Series level success. But I'm not sure. I don't know. Like, especially on the jersey side of it. Like, you would want, if you were to take a player, right? Like, what player is the face of baseball right now? Shohei Ohtani? Or is it Aaron Judge?
Tatis,
yeah. How many Fernando Tatis cutting boards are there?
I mean, is it still, would you try to still force Mike Trout to be it?
Right, yeah, exactly, yeah.
So, no, that's a good question. Like, what's most popular? Right? I mean, yeah, I would assume the Yankees too, just because of their fan base. I'd also assume the Dodgers because of their fan base.
Right, but I was thinking the Dodgers, like the Dodgers, because the Yankees are good this year, but the Dodgers had won a World Series, in a World Series. Yeah, there's like a whole bunch of there's recent success. Whereas the Yankees haven't been in a World Series since 2009. They've had some teams in the playoffs that have gotten derailed by the Red Sox or the Astros or whatnot, but the Dodgers have had recent success. Braves have. Astros certainly have. So, yeah, I'm interested to see which team would be the most popular one. I think the idea of your kids.
Watch it come back and be like the Twins.
I know, right? People in Minnesota. St. Louis is a good baseball town.
No, Cardinals would be a good one.
That's a great baseball
Maybe
team.
A lot of people are getting Pujols because it's the Pujols, final, the
why
last
not?
Hurrah.
I think the idea of getting like your kid's name and number on a cutting board would be awesome.
That'd be awesome.
Like, especially if your kid is played and is done or is playing, that'd be great. That would be great. Especially like a gift for like grandma and grandpa, your kid's baseball team with a jersey on it. Good stuff. BaseballBBQ.com is the website. Use a SportsMap 20 for 20% off. We'll talk Seattle Seahawks next.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue this morning previewing NFC West teams and we get to the Seattle Seahawks. Let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get a quote at progressive.com. Stacey Ross joins us 7:10 a.m. in Seattle to talk about a team that went 7-10 last year, but that was last year. 2022 is this year, and there's a quarterback battle for Pete Carroll between Drew Lock and Geno Smith. How are you, Stacey?
I'm well. How are you guys?
Good. So we know a familiar person, Maura Dooley.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw her at the Super Bowl. I got a quick story. She was a waitress in Colorado Springs. I was with my general manager. I was doing a show out there. And we went out to lunch. And she talked to us about being in sports media. And we gave her an internship. And I lost track of her. And I saw her at the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. I'm very glad she's doing well and part of your team at 7:10.
She's fantastic, and let me tell you what, she is. I don't know if this was apparent when she was working with you. She's like the fantasy football guru.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, my God, she's amazing. She's in a million leagues. We brought her into my league, which is 12 people, and now everyone hates me because she dominates. And they're like, why did you bring this girl, who's very, very nice, into our league? She wins every year. I'm like, guys, I'm so sorry.
Amazing. She's absolutely incredible. Thank you. Thanks for that. I appreciate it. Stacey, let's start with the sort of let's go back a bit. We were discussing this morning, kind of looking at this team big picture-wise, that when Russell Wilson was traded to Denver, I felt like there was just little logs that were getting thrown in the fire that led to this. So was it surprising when it actually went down? Because sometimes these things blow over. What was it like when the news came down he was indeed traded?
It was still surprising because we thought that it had blown over at least for this year. I think what became very apparent is this marriage is going to have an end. There will probably be no second contract for Russell Wilson in Seattle. I would say that during the season, we were all wondering, this is Russell Wilson's final year. Like, there were conversations happening with people covering the team, people who know well, saying, This is a player who's going to be traded. This feels messy. Like, there were rumors and rumblings from a Mike Sando article in The Athletic to, you know, several other sources of Russell Wilson being very unhappy with his lack of say in the offense. And then they ended the year on a streak of really successful games. Russell Wilson is back with the team. Rashad Penny, their former first round pick, takes off for a billion yards per game, and he's playing well. And they finished with back-to-back wins, and all of a sudden you're wondering, well, maybe Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll want to give this another go. Maybe they feel like they've got just enough pieces to, you know, why not play out the next year of your deal and just see how it goes? And then the offense became a little more quiet. Pete Carroll at the combine says, unprompted, by the way, as he's leaving the podium, reporters, the press conference is ended, tells reporters, you know, hey, one more thing. Russell Wilson, you know, like, he says, like, they have no interest in trading him because he knows he's getting those questions. So that's what he's answering. And then he's traded. So I think we thought that we had made it through the trade potential, the trade window. You know what I mean? Like, it's March, we're entering into the final month and a half before the draft, and there had been smoke and there wasn't any more. So I would say that the end of the marriage is not a surprise. That it happened with Denver, a team we all thought might be in there, when it did is a surprise.
And so they get Drew Lock. Carolina was dealing with sort of a similar thing. There was a guy there. They felt like they needed to get somebody else. They bring in Mayfield, but nobody was really thinking that Mayfield wasn't going to be the starter. But in
right.
Seattle, is this different? Is there a real battle? It could go either way, or is there a feeling like you bring in Drew Lock for a reason? He's probably the leader in the clubhouse.
No, I would say that maybe the opposite is true, that Pete Carroll has said the battle is open, and yet it has looked like, I'm talking from many camps, that the job is Geno Smith to lose.
All right.
So when they made the trade is for two first-round picks and two second-round picks. Drew Lock is the quarterback.
Just adding on to that.
Exactly. And I do think, genuinely, based on everything I've heard, that John Schneider and Pete Carroll think that Drew Lock is better than national critics do. I think that they think that maybe if he has some stability, he had a number of changes at offensive coordinator with Denver, and maybe someone believing in him, that he'll have a shot, right? Like, I personally don't think that they look at him and think he's just as good as Russ. But do they look at him and think he can be Jimmy G? I mean, maybe, right? With, like, the right coaching and the right potential should he reach his ceiling. But that being said, at that press conference when Pete Carroll and John Schneider are co-signing on Drew Locke, Pete Carroll says, you know, we'd love to have Geno Smith back here. Geno Smith was a free agent, not yet under contract with the team. Think of the leverage you're giving a free agent and how much you must like that player to, when he is not under contract, basically say, if he comes back, he's going to be in the lead for that starting role. If I'm Geno Smith, I'm coming back asking for much more money, saying like, oh, I'm going to be a starter? Let me tell you what. So Geno has been in the lead in minicamp. Pete Carroll said, you know, hey, want Drew to catch up with the playbook. When they came back in training camp, the assumption was maybe they'd be 50-50 reps. Not the case. It has been Geno Smith from day one of training camp with almost 100% of the reps with the ones. And I would expect at this point that he's your starter week one. Beyond that, I'm not sure.
Yeah, and that's an interesting question because they just gave DK Metcalf a nice contract and a nice contract extension. I would think you'd want the other piece of his success to be solidified as well.
You would.
Yeah, from the quarterback standpoint. Like you want to make sure whoever throwing him the football, that's locked in too. It's not going to be a rotating, bringing in somebody. They're just holding the place until we find the next franchise guy.
Yeah, I mean, again, I've assumed that locking down DK, who's only 24 years old, is part of a move to solidify the team for the next couple years as well. Yeah. So while you and I and many other fans are looking at it saying, I don't like how much I think DK's numbers are going to drop this year. Like, I'm not loving the production he's going to get from either Drew Locke or Geno Smith. At the end of the day, I don't think the team sees either of these guys as their long-term answer. So as much as people pan this quarterback battle, I would imagine that John Schneider has his eyes eagerly affixed to this upcoming draft class, knowing he's got two first-round picks.
In terms of changes, and obviously it's a big one at quarterback, what else is going on in Seattle? How are they adjusting to other things around the loss of Russell Wilson offensively? Is there going to be a feeling the offense has got to look different now? Is there a feeling like other guys are going to be able to fill in offensively, maybe better running game? All the little aspects of it, when you lose somebody as dynamic as him, somebody else fills the gap. How do they fill that gap offensively?
That's a good question. It will surprise absolutely no one to hear that Pete Carroll, a coach that's always valued balance on offense, is looking to the run game. They are looking at Rashad Penny, again, a former first-round pick, who, had he not taken off in the last five, 6 games of the season, we'd all be saying he was a bust. He could barely stay on the field. I think he had a high of something like 200 yards or less in a season before that. And to start this year, by the way, he was averaging 1.1 yards per carry, which is not good. And so he completely took off in the last 5 games of the season, was running, like, outside of Jonathan Taylor, the best running back in football, 170 yards against the Lions, 190 against the Cardinals the following week. And I think that Pete Carroll and this coaching staff, including offensive coordinator Shane Waldron, look at Rashad Penny, look at the number 9 pick, Charles Cross at left tackle, and the free agent addition of Austin Blythe at center, as well as the former third-round pick Damian Lewis at guard, who, as a side note, may not be there week one, and say, you know what, we can be balanced again. Yes, we love having Russell Wilson, but we can run the ball. We can make the quarterback rather than the forefront of the offense, the way that Russell Wilson wants to be and most certainly will be in Denver. We can make the quarterback the point guard. The quarterback is the middle of the offense. Things flow through him, but we want many, many pieces to be running smoothly. So that's why I think they like that they solidified DK, even though for us, we're like, well, how are you going to use them? They want as many weapons as possible so that it doesn't all have to be the quarterback filling in holes the way Russell Wilson did.
Defense is shifting, I believe, to a 3-4 now. Bobby Wagner's out. Jordan Brooks is a great player. In terms of this shift, was it more to do with better utilizing him?
I think that it was a long time coming. We had KJ Wright is a guy who is very thankfully kind of transparent about how he feels defenses should play in a very tactful way. And I remember him kind of talking about at one point this team maybe looking at that. Pete Carroll had said, hey, we'd kind of looked at it before. So I think it was more of a long time coming than we thought, but it was an idea Pete Carroll had flirted with. in years past, and maybe he just felt, Pete Carroll, that, you know, maybe we don't have the right personnel, or, you know, maybe I don't want to switch just yet. I mean, you get a new defensive coordinator in, why not change to your 3-4 that you've been wondering about? You can be faster, you can be younger, and not only that, but you're bringing in a number of people from Vic Fangio's defense that, you know, are looking at a 3-4 with this too high safety look, and all of a sudden you're looking at someone who can take advantage of Jamal Adams. So I would say it has more to do with Jamal Adams and some of the young, now outside linebackers that they have, rather than just Jordan Brooks.
This is a really tough division. But I wonder, how much do you think Seattle, with Pete Carroll and maybe some, again, some weapons, players that are good at what they do, how much does Seattle play a role in whoever wins that division and how that division looks? Because divisional games are so different than other games when there's familiarity.
Yeah.
How much does Seattle still go, look, we may not win this thing, but my God, it's we're going to make it difficult when you play us, Rams, Cardinals, 49ers.
Right. I don't know that they will change too much of it if you're expecting that the Rams will win, because Sean McVay and the Rams have always had the Seahawks number.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough, it's kind of this weird circle of Sean McVay and the Rams almost always beat the Seahawks, Pete Carroll Seahawks. Pete Carroll Seahawks almost always beat Kyle Shanahan's 49ers, and the 49ers almost always, you know, are just a bad matchup for the Rams. So I would say, once again, you're looking at the 49ers, if anything, impacting who wins this division. If they can handle the Rams, if Trey Lance ends up being stellar, if that defense, which, you know, we talked with Matt Maiocco of NBC Sports Bay Area, who expects them to be great again, if that defense can step up, I think the 49ers are going to have the most impact in the division on who we actually see representing this division, not only in the playoffs, but potentially if the Rams can get back to a Super Bowl or the NFC Championship. I don't know how much of a say Seattle will have.
I like to end this on a, I always like to ask big picture questions when it comes to these teams. And if you could give us a little bit of a feel for this, we were just chatting about this, about the Seahawks. And in the NFL, you get these windows of opportunities where the money works, the players work, everything is in sync. And if you can get two or three Super Bowls out of that, you're a dynasty and you're forever entrenched in the history of the sport. My God, Seattle 7 years ago looked like that. They absolutely looked like that team when they destroyed Denver. Then they go to the Super Bowl, the Patriots, and that famous play at the end. Do people in Seattle, and it's tricky because you're talking about the first championship, a Super Bowl title.
Yeah.
Do people feel like it was a lost opportunity, or do they go, look, we got one out of it, and my God, my whole life I never saw it, so I'm glad I saw it? Or do they feel like that was different than other teams winning a Super Bowl? They had something that could have been two or three in a short period of time before everything starts to go away like you see teams do.
So in my experience, this is a bit of a generational divide. I think that older fans see it as, I'm happy to have a championship. That was amazing. That was a great run. And I don't think that the Mariners' 20-year playoff drought has nothing to do with that. I think that Seattle has been so unlucky with some of its teams. Granted, the Sounders have been phenomenal. The Storm have been phenomenal. But the Sonics, taken from Seattle, the Mariners, you know, a 20-year playoff drought. Like, I think that people looked at the Seahawks in 2013 and thought, be happy that this happened, right? It's kind of this feeling of like a cursed town, being like, be grateful. And then younger fans, especially, who watch the NFL regularly, look at all these other teams and say, we had that chance. Do you know how hard it is to find a franchise quarterback? And do you know how many teams, the Jets, the Bears, decades without having that guy? What if we're looking at that again? So in my experience, younger fans feel like it was a wasted opportunity. And this isn't universal, but some older fans look at it and say, hey, be grateful that we had this phenomenal historic run.
Stacy Rost again, 7:10 a.m. in Seattle. Great, great stuff. Really appreciate your time waking up this morning for us. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
You got it. Again, Stacy on the Seahawks. Again, interesting team. I like what you said. They're honest. You know, like a lot of times you hear these teams, oh, no, they're going to play hard against divisionals. But she says, look, Sean McVay owns them, but they own them. It may not be as influential, but there's going to be some changes in Seattle. 3-4 defense, a couple of other things, but mostly at quarterback. We'll come back, wrap up the hour. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
With Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right. Thanks to Stacey Ross, 7:10 a.m. in Seattle, for joining us. Yeah, that story I told with my former intern, I met her at the Super Bowl in Atlanta. It was so out of nowhere. I honestly had lost track of her. I mean, literally, it was she literally was waiting on us at a restaurant. And when she found out who we were, what station she was, she said, oh, my God, I would love to get into that industry. And our general manager, Brenda, said, you know what? You should come to my office and set you up with an intern. Are you going to school?
Come
she said,
down.
Yes, I'm going to school. She said, well, we can work out an internship. You can join them in the morning and learn. And she was great. And, you know, she was a fantasy football
guru.
Guru.
So that was her first question to you. It was like, hey, was she as good at fantasy football?
She really was. And so she was with us for about a year, and I still have Anchorman. She lent me Anchorman because I didn't see it in theaters, and she gave me the DVD. I still have it.
You're going to have to return it.
I know. I told her, I said, well, if I get to the Super Bowl, I'll get back to we meet at the Super Bowl again. I'll make sure I bring it.
Yeah.
But years later, I'm in Atlanta walking around, and she yelled out my name, and I looked over, and I said, oh, my God, she was with the late John Clayton. She was John Clayton's producer.
She's their morning show producer.
Yeah, yeah. So I talked to John about it. I had known John when he'd come to Denver and Broncos, and he was amazed by her. She was so talented and so good. And I said, yeah, she was our intern, and you never know where stuff like that comes from and how you launch a career. And she launched a career. So she was great.